and spoil them. But we gotta get back to more programming. All right, it is 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa. As you probably know, just concluded our fall fun drive a little after 10 a.m. So thank you for everybody who supported the station during the past week. And, of course, it's never too late. You go to WMNF.org, still support whatever show you like, to support the station generally, and through the tip jar, or you can even call here and we could probably make some sort of arrangement. 813-238-8001. I'm Duncan Strauss, really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, the post-fun drive edition, in which we'll discuss dogs, writing about dogs, stories about dogs, and more. With John Katz, New York Times best-selling author of 21 books, many of those about dogs, including a new collection of short stories called Dancing Dogs. First, though, on this canine-oriented edition, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune, in this case, by a local band. This is the Bevins with Panting Dogs here on Talking Animals.
The pack howling in my ears. One voice cries, "Caca for me." Calling to a place of safety. It's a sign of plenty dogs. I'm a record grateful for a scrap of confidence. A sign of panting dogs, where fruitless searches end. A sign of panting dogs, that speaks of me.
The Bevins with Panting Dogs, a dog song to ease us into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, John Katz, New York Times bestselling author, most recently of Dancing Dogs. Katz has written 21 books, most of which focus on dogs, some of which deal with life on the farm in upstate New York he bought some years ago, Bedlam Farm, and the animals who live there with him. Dancing Dogs represents his first collection of short stories. We'll discuss this new collection, what helped shape it, and more when John Katz speaks with us in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And while speaking with John, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663. Or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Also, a bit later in the show, we'll step into the comedy corner. We'll also play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a copy of that new John Katz book, Dancing Dogs. Also, later in the show, we'll speak with Frank Hamilton, co-founder of Animal Coalition of Tampa, ACT, about Stride for Strays, ACT's annual event to raise funds for the operation, the low-cost spay and neuter operation, that's taking place this Sunday at Curtis Hickson Park. Right now, it's time for the Animal News and Announcements segment, a look at items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of local events on the horizon, produced, as always, by the Talking Animals, award-winning Rip and Reed News Department. First, again, as we just mentioned, and mentioned a few times in the last hour plus, we just concluded our fall membership drive, and big thanks to everyone who supported the station, and all the shows had a chance to pitch, and you had a chance to support them, but it's never too late, never too late. You can go to WMNF.org and support a specific show through their tip jar, or just support the station generally if, again, you were busy out of town, caught up with debates, baseball games, who knows what else. So it's still never too late, folks. We got very close to our goal, but we didn't quite make it. So we'd still invite you to help us out. And you can also probably call in at 813-238-8001, and someone would still be happy to take your pledge. Personally, for Talking Animals, I want to thank everyone who sent in pre-pledges, tipped us in our tip jar, pledged during this hour last Wednesday. We made our goal, and false modesty prevents me from mentioning how far we exceeded our goal, but it was quite a bit. And so thank you, though. Again, you know, even amidst the outpouring of support for the show, suggesting, you know, people do like Talking Animals, and we've sort of taken hold here in the last few years since we started the show in California several years ago, almost 10 years ago. But there's always something humbling moments to kind of right the ship. Like the woman who pledged last week, and her pledge card comment was, "Do we have to have Talking Animals on every week?" So there you go. And this is from someone who supported Talking Animals. So, you know, that'll keep you on an even keel. Also, speaking of congrats and thanks and kudos, all those things are more to Florida Voices for Animals and everyone else who participated in last Saturday's Veg Fest. Tremendous event. Beautiful, clear, sunny day. So that was wonderful for them and all who came out. But everything was so well organized and had a wonderful, friendly, very upbeat vibe. Cruised around with Flea, and we had a great time. We visited with most of the people in the booths and tables and sampled the samples and hassled some people with some Talking Animals flyers and met and pet all kinds of wonderful dogs. And anyways, it was really great. So, again, big congratulations. That's a gigantic undertaking to have something that sprawling with that many moving parts go that well. So hats off. And lastly, and without further comment, I want to say rest in peace, Sirius Black. All right, on to some animal news. Local-based news, at least by way of Miami. Following a lawsuit filed by PETA and the Animal Legal Defense Fund, the National Marine Fisheries Service has agreed to reconsider its exclusion of the orca Lolita from the Endangered Species Act listing of the southern resident orcas, the family from which she was taken more than 40 years ago. While endangered listings are to include captive members of a species by default, Lolita, who is confined to the smallest orca tank in North America at the Miami Seaquarium, was unlawfully excluded without explanation, allowing the Seaquarium to hold her in conditions that harm and harass her and would otherwise violate the ESA. Pursuant to the agreement, PETA and ALDF will submit a new petition for Lolita to be included in the listing with her family, and the agency must, within specified time periods, decide whether her listing is warranted based solely on the biological status of the southern resident orcas. The filing of the original lawsuit was handled by the law firm Meyer, Glitzenstein, and Crystal. So, anyways, an interesting step forward in our efforts to have orcas not be scrunched up in a little swimming pool tank. Other animal news taking place in and around Florida at the moment. Took this one from the Palm Beach Post. Headline, Puppy Mill Lawsuit Tossed. A lawsuit accusing a Cooper City firm of peddling dogs from puppy mills has been dismissed, igniting a firestorm of accusations between it and the venerable Humane Society of the United States. In persuading Miami-Dade County Circuit Judge Spencer Eig to dismiss the lawsuit filed by Palm Beach Gardens attorney Ted Leopold. Attorneys representing Purebred Breeders, LLC, claim the action is yet another example of the Humane Society's efforts to keep people from owning pets. While Humane Society wasn't a party to the lawsuit, Purebred attorney Christopher Carver said the group's involvement in the media storm that erupted when it was filed in December suggests the group was the force behind it. Quote, the purpose of this media offensive and this lawsuit itself is clear. HSUS wants to stop people from purchasing pets, he wrote. Carver said the multi-million dollar organization, which he described in court papers as an activist group and lobbying organization, shouldn't be confused with local humane societies that do shelter and care for animals. In the 12-line ruling, the judge said he was dismissing the lawsuit for all the reasons Carver outlined in his 24-page motion. He gave Leopold 30 days to redraft the suit and hopes it will pass legal muster. So we'll watch that one for you and report back as it unfolds. And more locally here, the Clearwater Audubon Society has an array of field trips and programs scheduled for the month of October, including this Saturday, October 21st at Fort DeSoto Park, 7:15 a.m. You can meet at the Tri-City Plaza at the Pantry Store. And again, they say their field trips and programs are open to anyone who is interested in learning about Florida's environment. You can call or email the appropriate contact field trip leader for information and direction. So in this case, the one that's happening on the 20th is Lynn Summerson at 727-596-5822. And just a further reminder, this month, October, is Pitbull Awareness Month. Stop breed-specific legislation. Also coming up Saturday, October 20th, I mentioned this last week, even in the midst of our Fundripe show, that Hillsborough County Animal Services has put together an event called Cats, Bats, and Bones, taking place at Hillsborough County Animal Services, 440 North Falkenberg Road in Tampa from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., where you can meet real Florida bats from a biologist at Bat Belfries. The Bat Chats begin at 1:30 p.m. You can trick-or-treat with shelter animals, strut your stuff in the kids' costume parade, color creation to decorate the shelter, and of course, you can come fall, quote-unquote, for your new best friends. So that's all taking place this Saturday. And just the general hours at the shelter, Tuesday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., Saturday, 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m., Sunday, 11 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. This little blurb, I just will read. The nation's largest meat company, Tyson Foods, says it's launching an animal treatment audit of suppliers' farms. Animal welfare activists have been pressuring Tyson to move away from cramped cages for pregnant pigs, but the Springdale, Arkansas-based company says the move is not in response to the Humane Society of the United States or other organization. Tyson says auditors will check on such things as animal access to food and water, as well as proper human-animal interaction and worker training. And perhaps finally for the moment, a controversial British plan to cull thousands of wild badgers to control the spread of bovine tuberculosis is a quote-unquote costly distraction that risks increasing incidences of the disease, wildlife experts said over the weekend. You might remember this is one of the things we've talked about not once but twice, I think, with Queen guitarist Brian May here on Talking Animals. The story goes on. The mass killing of the furry black and white nocturnal creatures, which have been found to help spread tuberculosis in cattle, has raised the threat of action by militant animal rights activists. The move was also opposed by celebrities, including, there we go, yeah, Queen guitarist Brian May and veteran nature show presenter David Attenborough. We believe the complexities of TB transmission mean that licensed culling risks increasing cattle TB rather than reducing it. Patrick Bateson, president of the Zoological Society of London, said in a letter to Britain's Observer newspaper signed by 30 other wildlife experts. And even if such risks do not materialize, the government predicts only limited benefits. We are concerned that badger culling risks becoming a costly distraction from nationwide TB control, Bateson said. So again, we will continue to track that. And lastly, let me just remind you, we've mentioned this many times now on the show, but if you live in the 33610 area code, the Humane Society of Tampa Bay does offer incredibly well-priced cat sterilizations for indoor and outdoor cats living in that zip code, 33610, thanks to a grant from PetSmart Charities. All right, if we have time to come back, we will, to other news and announcements. Right now, though, it's time to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, extending our canine concept with our impending chat with John Katz in mind. This is Aaron Foley with a piece simply entitled Dogs on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
I'm thinking about getting a dog. Dog people, clap. Yeah? People love the dogs. I love the dog. I've never had a dog. It would be super exciting to get a dog. Not, and funny. hilarious. I don't know what kind of dog I want to get. It just seems like when I look around, there's a lot of aggressive crossbreeding going on with dogs these days. It's weird. I don't even know what I'm looking at anymore. Like, you used to be able to look at a dog and be like, that's a lab. That's a golden retriever. Now you look at a dog and you're like, what the hell is that? It's like a face of like a Doberman. Like a shepherd body. But it's so tiny. It's such a tiny dog. And I'm always like, excuse me, what kind of dog do you have? And they're like, it's a German Doberoodle. Yes, yes, yes. I don't know why I didn't go with German Doberoodle. Yes. I was going to go with creepy, because it's a creepy dog. You're creepy, and the whole situation's creepy. I kind of want to, like, push the envelope with the dog owners. You know what I mean? What I want to do is I want to rent a Shetland pony and take it into the dog park. Just to see the look of the dog owner's faces and be like, excuse me, what kind of dog is that? It's like a mutt. I don't know. It's like part mastiff, Great Dane, hyena, collie mix. Something like that. Wow, it just really looks like a Shetland pony. I know! We get that all the time! It's uncanny. Absolutely uncanny. But it's such a great dog. I mean, I haven't even heard it bark. It's just... quiet. Quiet dog. And then I'm going to jump on top of it and ride it out of the park.
All right. That was Aaron Foley with a piece you may be unsurprised to learn is called simply Dogs. Take it from her album Lower the Bar. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, John Katz. As I noted earlier in the show, John is a New York Times bestselling author, and he seems to be getting the hang of it, and that he's written 21 books. Notwithstanding that prolific output, his new book, Dancing Dogs, represents his first collection of short stories. So with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome back to the show, John Katz. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Duncan. Thank you for having me back.
Absolutely. Great to have you back, and congratulations on Dancing Dogs. You've written, prior to that, I think some 20 books, yet Dancing Dogs, as I just mentioned in the intro, is the first collection of short stories. You know, I guess one place to start is why or why now?
Well, I always like new creative challenges. I always try something different. But I thought short stories would be a way for me to look at dogs and attachment in different ways rather than just one. So I have all different kinds of people. I have young people, old people, somebody from New York, people from Michigan. So I could mix it up. There's a farmer in there. I wanted to have some more range to the stories rather than just one single subject. So it would enable me to look at animals and people's affection for them a whole bunch of different ways.
Sure. Well, so, yeah, I mean, because in reading Dancing Dogs, I mean, anyone who's ever, written anything beyond sort of a grocery list has surely encountered the bromide, you know, write what you know. And in reading Dancing Dogs, I thought, boy, John's really written what he knows and to some extent written what he's written. I mean, not in the sense of repeating yourself, but just tapping into topics and themes you've explored, particularly recently, maybe in full-length books, but while trying the new form of short stories. How does that square with your own sense of the book and the stories you wrote for it?
I think that's exactly right. I thought it was a way to tap into what was happening around me. I got the idea for the book when the recession started, and I saw how people struggling with all kinds of things really worked hard to get animals in their lives. and how much more animals meant to them was one part of it. And then another part of it was, you know, I drove my own experience on the farm living with dogs and living with other animals. So the dog, most of these stories are about dogs, but some of them are about animal, like donkeys in one of them, barn cats in one of them. I was really interested in this connection, the point of connection between people and the animals they love. Even when things are difficult, people really fight to get animals into their lives and keep them there, and the animals mean so much to them. And I wanted to capture that moment, that point of connection. It was a story about an old farmer who had an old border collie, and they ran into an old coyote, and how the three of them just figured out what to do at that point in life.
Yeah.
And this is a story about a young girl in New York City whose dog died, and she kind of figured out what to do with it. I never thought about that before, but if you have a dog in New York City, what do you do with the dog? That's a part of the grieving there. So I wrote a story about that.
Yeah, well, that's one I did want to speak about, because, you know, part of the thing of feeling like that the collection kind of represents a summation of again, some of the issues and true life stories contained in your books, maybe particularly the more recent books, and some of that has been, you know, dealing with people dying, some of it's been dealing with dogs dying. So it's been dealing with, you know, how dogs can help in that process, hospice care, et cetera. So yeah, the thing you're alluding to is Gracie's last walk, where yeah, she's kind of this woman that's struggling with like, hey, you know, sadly my dog did die, but now what do I do? And, you know, no writer's experience and accomplishes you makes kind of any choice in a new book willy-nilly. So obviously you chose to start the collection with that book. Can you sort of just talk a little bit about the story and why it got sort of the opening slot, as it were?
Well, my editor actually picked the story, the selection, and she thought it was really good because it was a surprising kind of a story. It just was surprising. And it was triggered by, I was visiting my daughter in New York, and I ran to one of her friends. She was crying. She said her dog had just died. And I said, well, what happened? And she said, well, I called the vet. I said, my dog died. What should I do? And he said, well, put her in a suitcase and bring her over. And I thought, wow, it's not really funny, but it is sort of funny. And I thought, well, wow, I never thought of that. But what you do in New York or in other places when a dog dies like that. So the story became her journey of her last walk with the dog, so to speak, and what she went through getting the dog. And it turned out everybody I mentioned it to in New York City said, yeah, we do that. That's what the vets always tell us to do. And I called a couple of vets, and I said, what do you do when a dog dies? And they said, yeah, we tell them to put him in a suitcase because there's no other way to get him around.
Yeah.
So I just thought, well, that's a way, you know, that's something we just don't think about. So that was a little bit surprising.
Sure.
And well, you know, there's something that's interesting. Go ahead. Most animal books are what I would call very cute. They're about really cute, happy animals.
Yeah.
Some of these stories are not. And so some people are a little bit upset that they're not all very happy. They all have happy endings, but they're about real life with real dogs. And you know, there is some sort of sadness and trouble with that.
Well, and if they're that upset, they either haven't read, you know, too much of your work before, or they haven't been paying attention, because, some of these, like you say, or many of them do have a happy ending, but there's, you know, there's texture here, and there's real life experiences with humans and dogs and in some cases other animals. So yeah, it's not, this isn't a fairy tale. This isn't like a, you know, this is a, you know, a rich, deep, set of stories and people's experiences. And even another thing too, that again, you just don't think about. Because, yeah, you live on a farm. Some of us, you know, don't have to struggle if, unfortunately, we're faced with one of our animals dying like that. But even part of that story, and I'm sure people, you know, will read it when they have a chance, but even the further struggle of, like, okay, how do you physically, okay, once the vet has told you to put it in a suitcase, then, you know, how do you, are you get in a cab? Probably not. Then you get on a subway, and that presents its own challenges, which the character Gracie really contends with. And it's like, wow, I mean, so many additional struggles that you just don't ponder unless you're, you know, living that life or thrust into that situation.
Well, I think the theme of every single story in the book is how much people love their dog.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, what they go through. And I was also very inspired by some people I met, mostly women, who were working in these box store jobs. And they're crummy jobs. They don't pay anything. There's no security. They get laid off all the time because they don't want to give them benefits. And so all these women had these dogs that they just loved to death, and that were the most important relationships in their lives, sometimes more important than their husbands, it seems. So that was very important, I think, for me to see that. I was very touched by that and very surprised by that.
Yeah.
You know, this is how much people really love these animals. And I think that was a theme that ran through all of the stories, was this depth of connection and feeling that people had.
For sure.
I think too, even though the recession occurred and people were struggling for money, people weren't giving up on dogs. I mean, some people had to abandon dogs to shelters and stuff, but some people really fought harder to get them in their lives because they're really important to people.
Absolutely.
So the stories were very touching to me that way.
Yeah. Well, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with the author John Katz, whose new book, a collection of short stories, this first one, is Dancing Dogs. If you'd like to ask John a question, talk about your own dog, or offer some other kind of comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. And I of course agree, John, that sort of a through line here amongst these stories is the connection between humans and dogs. But there's at least one story where that suggests, you know, us humans maybe have gotten it slightly wrong. I'm thinking, of course, of Lucky's Day, where I don't know if you want to talk about it or I will, but yeah.
Well, Lucky's Day was one of my favorite stories. You know, everybody's very worried about what their dogs do when they leave them alone. But they can leave their dogs alone, and they're worried that they're bored or they're lonely. So I thought, would it be interesting to write a story about just imagining what did a dog do all day when they're left alone? What do they do there? And so I used my own notion about it was they have a pretty good time. You know, they sniff pizza crumbs and look for garbage and they talk to each other. And the heart of that story was Lucky at the end of every afternoon would talk to the other dogs.
Yeah.
He would kind of howl and bark and they would talk to him. And they'd have this conversation about how they deal with people and the problems in their lives. And I had a good time with that. I had a lot of fun with that because I think, you know, there are actually right now, there are 340,000 dogs in America on Prozac, mostly for separation anxiety.
Wow.
Which I think is a bit of a shocking thing. You know, dogs managed to go 20,000 years without Prozac.
Yeah.
And now they all seem to need it. And I think some of this obviously is valuable for people, but some of it I think is also human projection. I think we're the ones who are really anxious.
Yeah.
I think the dogs can handle themselves, and dogs don't mind being alone. So I wanted the story, you know, to have a sort of a bit of a serious point to it, which was that, you know, get people to think a little bit about whether the dogs are really that unhappy, whether the dogs are okay, whether the dogs, you know, they're not aware of the passage of time. They can amuse themselves pretty well.
Yeah. Well, this.
Go ahead, sorry. Well, I want to have Lucky just basically in a setting where, you know, he could handle himself. He had stuff to do. He amused himself.
Yeah. Well, no, this guy had a full dance card and really kind of it spins on our head that notion that, oh, gosh, the poor dog, I have to go off to these meetings or I have to go off to work. And if this guy's any indication, you know, they barely can get everything done by the time you get back, you know. So
and they have to look sad. They have to look sad, so we're gonna
right.
So we'll miss them.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So
I do think there's a lot of projecting of stuff onto dogs that are
sure.
not really good for them.
Right.
Because they're very adaptable creatures.
Well, and yeah, and I think a related note, we might even talk about this before, but you know, you try to, if you, especially you adopt a dog and you know, maybe there's a little quirk or a little behavioral thing and you try to figure it out. Of course you want to try to figure it out. But a lot of times, you know, your guess is as good as bad as the next person. But yeah, you're trying to, use psychoanalysis or whatever it might be to say, well, why does he react this way when a man comes over or a tall man or, you know, and, it may have nothing to do with what your best theory is, but, similar limitation.
I think the common tendency, the behaviorist calls a theory of mind, is to put our own thoughts into the dog's head. When we're not sure what's happening, we sort of assume they're thinking like we think. They're jealous or they're angry or they're depressed. And you know, dogs don't really think that way. They don't have words. They don't have language. And dogs, if left to their own, if you follow a dog around in the wild, or they would basically sit around 20 hours a day like lions and do nothing.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they do, and they're good at that. And they don't know the difference between 1 hour and 5 hours. I think a lot of separation anxiety is a transference of people's anxiety onto the dog. Because I've personally never had a dog with anything like separation anxiety. When I go out, I put him in the crate and I leave him there. And I come home and they're there. I don't have any trouble. I don't have any,
yeah.
you know, chewed up things or food stolen or anything like that. So I think it's good to sort of relax a bit and enjoy them, but not so much turn them into, you know, little variations of us.
Right. Yeah. You could certainly overthink it. And I think a lot of people do only with the best intentions, but still. Now there's another story that perhaps similarly plays with our expectations of what goes on in the dog world, but I guess in a more, I don't know, spiritual or maybe celestial way. I'm thinking, of course, of Luther and Minnie in heaven. Maybe you could talk briefly about that one.
I think that's actually my favorite story.
Okay.
It's a little controversial. Some people don't like it, but I like it. It's about a woman who wanted to meet her dog in heaven when she died. You know, the best-selling books are really about meeting dogs in the afterlife. People love them so much they want to spend eternity with them. So in the story, Minnie dies, and she goes to heaven, and her dog has died, and she asks the dog angel if she can find him. The dog angel, who's a large woman with wings and dog biscuits all over the place, and she says, well, I'll take you there. You may not like it. And dog heaven turns out to be a place where some of the dogs are having sex, and some of the dogs are chewing up gardens, and some of the dogs are digging up bulbs and lawn and stuff. And Minnie's horrified. Said, my God, I never let him do any of these things on earth. She said, I know, that's why we call it heaven up here. So the idea being that, you know, a bad dog in America is a dog that actually behaves like a dog. And a good dog is a dog that behaves like us. And so dogs, it's a conflict. We don't like them to do almost any of the things they like naturally to do. So we then end up having to train them and change them.
Sure.
It's a bit of tension in the relationship. But dogs left to their own devices would not be what we call good dogs. They'd be pretty dirty and pretty scummy and pretty randy.
Right. So we make this contract with them, I guess.
We make a contract with them, and it's not a bad contract. They get taken care of.
Yeah.
They get shelter. They get fed. And we change the behavior. Changing the behavior, of course, is what training is all about.
Yeah.
And that's where training becomes important, because it's very hard for most people to do it. So that story was really challenging us with some humor, hopefully, to look at things a little bit from their perspective.
For sure.
And not just our perspective, and try to see things the way they do.
Yeah. Well, again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is author John Katz, whose new book is Dancing Dogs. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. Let's talk a little bit about the title story, Dancing Dogs. I mean, I don't necessarily think of you as someone who would advocate for dogs kind of singing for their supper, as it were, or in this case, having them perform in a dance act. But I kind of also see this story as sort of underscoring the way animals, dogs, in this case, obviously, can sort of serve as our salvation on various levels.
That was the idea, really. The idea of a woman who was really struggling economically and trying to feed, but loved her dogs to death, wanted to be with them. And so she had fun training them to dance. And you know, for them, it was just like work. You know, they enjoyed it. It was fun. It was not something I probably would do, you're right. But she also figured out that she could make a living out of it. She was actually able to take them to weddings and speaking groups and luncheons and get paid for it. So she developed an act called Dancing Dogs, and it was all booked up. And, you know, she didn't make a ton of money, but she was actually able to make a living doing it. And it was another way of seeing how much people love their dogs and how they can bring them into their lives and use them, and use them even to survive and bounce back. So I thought that was a very uplifting story for me, because she found these dogs and found a way to kind of bring them into her life in a way that give her some independence and some money.
Right, and she kind of literally was literally uplifting, because she was, you know, in pretty dire straits financially and a complicated situation with her husband. And once she kind of figured out how to make this work, you know, everybody's life improved. So
I think there are a lot of people, too, who fantasize about having a life with dogs. I mean,
yeah.
I did that in the sense of when I came up with my partner. I can have a dog and I can think about them, you know, and that can be a really neat thing for me to do. So the dogs for me became a way to do what I loved and also to make a living at it and also to be on the farm. So I think in that sense, you know, I think it's great. It's really great if people can combine their love of dogs with their work. Dog walkers do that. Dog trainers do that. Some photographers do that. It's rare. It's not easy to do, but she kind of pulled it off.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and sort of along those lines, I mean, and back to sort of the write what you know thing we talked about at the beginning, and this book may be serving as a summation of your books and your life experiences. I mean, other animals play at least a supporting role in this book, you know, reflecting your life at Bedlam Farm, and, you know, sort of particularly making a case for a bit of shared spotlight in this, a dog book. Is with the title right off the bat is Barn Cat, which I gotta believe is kind of rooted in your own, you know, experiences with your barn cat's mother and Minnie, and perhaps their predecessors.
The barn cat was I love the barn cats I have. They're very exotic and mysterious animals. You know, they're sort of very wild and very much out there.
Yeah.
And yet they're also very affectionate and very protective, very hardworking creatures.
Sure.
They lead very tough lives. So that story was about a farmer's wife, her effort to try to connect with a barn cat, who actually had become friends with a dying rooster. And a woman was just trying to get in touch with her and get close to her and invite her to stay in the house. And the barn cat, of course, being barn cats, don't really want to stay in the house.
Yeah.
So that was a story about that kind of a love, which is, you know, very difficult. If you love a barn cat, you're probably going to suffer some pain.
Sure. But again, it also spoke, among other things, to, you know, the unusual or seemingly unusual alliances that can happen across species and the friendships and even, in this case, protective kind of situation that'll develop where you would think, hey, these guys in a different set of circumstances would either not get along or would be, you know, enemies.
Right. That's right. And I see these very odd friendships among animals all the time. Cats with roosters and dogs with chickens.
Yeah.
And chickens with donkeys. It's amazing how these cross species can develop these attachments and connections that you just can't really explain.
Yeah. And with that in mind, John, I mean, we may have already sort of found this by our conversation about Luther and Minnie in Heaven, but are there one to two stories maybe amongst this collection in particular where you, set out to create a certain world or advance a certain theme? And when you finished writing it, you said to yourself, yeah, that, you know, I really kind of nailed what I was going for.
Well, you never know. You know, it's funny. You don't really know until the book comes out how people are going to react to it. This one has been very well received.
Yeah.
It's really doing very well. And I'm surprised because short stories don't really sell that well as a rule. But I think it's a good medium for me because I do have a wide-ranging interest in animals. I live with a bunch of different animals, and it's kind of broadening for me. I can kind of reach out, but I could also imagine these animals in their lives a lot of things. It's fun for me.
And what's if you had to be pinned down, what's the story with the most John Katz in it? The most maybe portrays your view of and experiences with dogs over the years.
A good one. You know, I think they all do it a little way.
Mm-hmm.
One story I think that touched me was the old dog story.
Yeah.
About this old farmer and the three-legged border collie, and they run into an old coyote. Trouble. So I thought that was a great way of kind of capturing how these animals intersect with us at different points in our lives.
Sure.
And this guy has to figure out, you know, what he's going to do with his life, and the coyote kind of forces him to think about it, making decisions what kind of a life he wants to live. That was a pretty interesting story for me. I think that would probably touch me the most emotionally.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I mean, as people probably are getting the sense of just from what we've covered already, I mean, there's a lot of range and a lot of sort of colors and tales here, and you know, obviously so many facets of the canine-human relationship are represented in this collection, to the extent that even different sides of the shelter experience are sort of presented here. With thinking about that, maybe you could speak a little bit to the Surrender Bay.
The Surrender Bay was a story about a shelter on the eve of the recession, and this young woman is nearly overwhelmed with the people dropping their animals off because they couldn't afford them, and also her desire to try to make life pleasant for them and give them a good send-off if they had to happen. So she was very, you know, vulnerable and very brave. She had to deal with the emotions of people. She had to deal with losing a lot of animals. She was overwhelmed with none of these people make any money or have enough money. The shelters are all very underfunded. And also a way of looking at the rescue culture, too, and what how many people are in it and how committed they are to it and how intense the subculture it is. Because, you know, shelters are a world. We sometimes go there and get dogs, but we don't enter this world very often or know that much about it.
Yeah.
So I wanted to go inside the life of a shelter, especially at a time when they were so pressured. That story was a good way to do that.
Yeah, yeah, and again, a tough look at people that are, you know, forced really ultimately to make very, very hard choices, and obviously, you know, they've considered all the other options, and they wind up at that surrender bay. So, John, we're sort of just in the last minute or two, probably, of our time, but. You know, when I asked you about the one or two that where you felt like what you set out to do and you really, you know, when you got done writing and you felt like you nailed it and you kind of said it was more how the response was once the book was done and out. But along the process, was there a story or two that even managed to surprise you or kind of taught you something that you know, just didn't necessarily expect to find by, you know, when the page was blank, but until the time you hit the end of the last word?
Not really. I mean, I wanted all of them to be a little surprising. I wanted them. I wrote a story called Pearl and Joan. It's a very healthy exercise for me to do because you Pearl and Joan are a dog and a woman who spend the whole day together, and you don't know which one is which until the very end. It's not clear who's the person and who's the dog.
Yeah.
And I wanted to show the closeness people have with these animals, that sometimes they're so inseparable you really can't tell them apart.
Right.
So I think that one was a good challenge writing-wise, too. You had to write it in such a way that didn't give it away.
Sure.
And so you had to actually put your in my head, you know, in the mind of a woman and the mind of a dog and make it, you know, make it credible without giving away the reality of either one.
Yeah. Well, I'd say at this point, you know, probably pretty good with the mind of the woman, but I think clearly at this point, very, very good at getting into the mind of the dog. I mean, that's kind of runs through a lot of your work. So John, do you think that, the next book is likely to be full length? And, but I imagine you'll probably come back at some point to the short story form, given how this is, gone.
Well, my next book is going to be called Frida, A Love Story. It's this Rottweiler Shepherd mix that my new wife rescued.
Oh.
And how she brought us together in this relationship. And she was a dog that was abandoned in the Adirondacks for several years.
Oh, wow.
And how she was a very difficult dog to train. I call her the dog who kept men away. She inspired another one of the stories in the book.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So, and then I don't, the thing with publishing is they wait and see how the book does.
Okay.
If the short stories do well, I'll get to do another one.
Right.
If they don't do well, then I won't.
Yeah, well, it sounds like this is off to a very, very promising start in that way. So,
that's a good story. We went to a second printing today.
That's great.
So that's good news.
Yeah, and it's certainly gotten some very nice reviews. And, well, anybody who cares about dogs and or good writing and other things too is, I think, likely to, really enjoy this. So, John, thanks again. We've been speaking with John Katz. Again, the new book is Dancing Dogs, obviously a collection of short stories. And, you can find out more about the book and the whole life on Bedlam Farm and other things and blog posts and stuff at Bedlam Farm, BEDLAM Farm.com. And he's also at Facebook, / Bedlam Farm and Twitter and the whole social networking thing for dog action and John Katz action. So, John, thanks again for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Thanks, Doug. It's great as always. I appreciate it.
Likewise. All right. Take care. All right. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. This is a giveaway. You do not need to be a WNF member to win, and there'll be a prize. A copy of John Katz's new book, Dancing Dogs. So the first person who calls in the correct title of this animal tune, to 813-239-9663. In a moment, we'll speak with Frank Hamilton of the Animal Coalition of Tampa about their event this Sunday. Stride for Strays. Right now, though, it's Name That Animal Tune. I'm Talking Animals.
Now we're gone.
wants to call in. It's a different version of the song, but pretty recognizable, so you should be able to name that animal tune. Right now, though, I want to welcome Frank Hamilton, co-founder of Animal Coalition of Tampa, to Talking Animals. Frank, are you there?
Good morning, Duncan. How are you?
I'm very good. Thanks so much for joining us on Talking Animals.
Well, thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So, even though I think we've addressed this a few times over the years, you never know who is listening or who new is listening. So let's briefly at least just find out, what is Animal Coalition of Tampa and what does it do?
Hi, Animal Coalition of Tampa was founded to end euthanasia of dogs and cats in Hillsborough County back in 2001. Since then, we have opened a high-volume spay-neuter and wellness clinic. We opened that in 2006, and last year we did 11,000 spay-neuter surgeries and saw over 20,000 animals. Our goal is to help those who can't help themselves.
Yeah, and as part of that, I guess really the key thing is making something that can be you know, without getting into specifics of prices, can be expensive, you know, spaying and neutering your new animal member of your family and making that much more affordable to do so. But like anything else like that that's a nonprofit, funding is always an important concern.
Funding is a critical thing. To help those of limited income, we always are looking for additional revenue.
Sure.
And our big annual fundraiser is Stride for Strays. This will be the 12th annual Stride for Strays. It's at Curtis Hickson Park this Sunday from 11 to 6. And we're starting something a little different this year. First of all, we're doing it on a Sunday afternoon.
Right.
We have the Crew of Paradise coming, who are going to provide some assistance in their float. So we're going to make it a little bit more of a party atmosphere. We'll have live entertainment. We have several groups. We will be there, of course, obviously. And this year we will be providing microchips have microchips.
Mm-hmm.
And we will also be supported by Tampa Bay Emergency Vet Services. We'll be sharing a pavilion, so we will have some medical things going on. But the big event, of course, is getting out on a Sunday afternoon with your dogs in a park across from the University of Tampa and taking a little bit of a walk. And the walk starts about 1 o'clock, and we'll go for about 2 miles.
And that's great. And like you say, that is kind of the core of Stride for Strays. But as you've also noted, if someone is, you know, not inclined or is simply not able to participate in the walk, there's plenty of other elements to the event, that some of which you've noted. And again, there's, you know, food and, live music and raffles, I think, and contests and things
right
beyond those that you've already mentioned. So, and of course, as all these things, as long as your animal is on a leash, I believe they're welcome to attend, are they not, Frank?
Animals, all dogs on a leash are certainly invited to attend. We
sure
did have a cat come a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, you can either hold the cat in your hands or put them in the carrier, and absolutely not necessarily fun for a single cat when there are hundreds of dogs around.
Yeah, that was sort of an interesting decision by whoever brought them, but they probably didn't bring them the next year, I'm guessing. So,
no,
yeah.
We only saw that once.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but again, it gets a chance for people with their dogs to get out on a Sunday afternoon.
Sure.
And you know, enjoy the park and help us raise funds to do what we do on a daily basis.
Right.
And this is a fundraiser, and we do have vendors there. We, as you said, we do have food. We have some food trucks coming this year.
Sure.
We have a Little Greek, which will be there, and they'll be vegan, vegetarian food.
Great.
So a wide variety of opportunities for people just to be around and have a good time.
Something for everybody, I believe, is the phrase, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And
so,
one other thing that I will mention is we do have a beer sponsor this year. So we're really trying something new. And we do have a beer tent.
Okay.
$3 a glass, and again, all proceeds go to Animal Coalition of Tampa.
Cool. Well, this sounds really great, Frank, and we should note that for people who want to sign up to walk or otherwise just find out more information, there's a dedicated website for this, strideforstrays.org.
Yes.
And, of course, Animal Coalition of Tampa's website is actampa.org. So you can get information coming and going and find out more details about Stride for Stray. Again, this is happening this Sunday, October 21st, Curtis Hickson Park. And it sounds like it's just going to be a great event with all kinds of fun, no matter, you know, where your interests lie. If you like animals, that's probably where you're going to have a good time.
This will be the place in Tampa to be on Sunday afternoon, absolutely.
All right, Frank. Well, thanks for all your great work. Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals. And we'll see everybody out there Sunday.
Well, thank you for having us, and we look forward to seeing everyone on Sunday.
Great. Thank you.
Right.
Bye-bye.
I know.
All right. We have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. We'll be back next Wednesday, October 24th, when our guest will be Kathy Unruh, author of Taming Me, Memoir of a Clever Island Cat, written in the voice of a former feral kitten found on the island of, and appropriately enough, Cat Key. And her transformation into a family cat, with much of the saga taking place against this backdrop of the Bahamas. So today we talked about dogs. Next week, equal time for the cats. And you might also know Kathy as a former TV journalist in Tampa who still hosts Up Close with Kathy Unruh and other programs on WEDU. So Kathy will join us next Wednesday, October 24th. I hope you will too. I also hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby Busalis. My thanks to her. Again, our thanks to everybody who supported Talking Animals and WMNF at large. We're still taking pledges, including Elaine, who called in and supported the station, doing a nice Circle of Friends pledge. So we appreciate that. And again, it's never too late to support WMNF. WMNF.org. You can support the station generally, or you can pick a specific show and hit their tip jar, and all of it's much appreciated. So we got close to reaching our goal, but we're not there, so we could still use your help and support. Anyway, I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for the wonderful Scott Elliott and the All Souls edition of It's the Music, airing next from noon to 3. We're closing out today's show with yet another dog tune. This is John Hyatt with My Dog and Me, taking us up to the NPR News on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Thanks for listening. Speak with you next week on Talking Animals. Again, thanks for all your support of Talking Animals and WMNF at large. We'll talk to you next Wednesday on Talking Animals.
Trail up the backbone ridge. How many times can one dog pee? Keeps me high as an eagle when I'm on the skids. I guess you gotta come down eventually. But I could have gone that extra mile for an extra bark or an extra smile. 'Cause I never felt so free. It was just my dog and me. Then she gives me that look like she'd lay down a line. No doubt she would in a minute, man. She'd face the bullet, oh, she'd face the knife, just to keep my butt from a frying pan. She's running up ahead to chase some deer. Comes back to tell me that the coast is clear. It's a different world I see when it's just my dog and me. There's a devil's back. She wouldn't know any other way. Now it's over that ridge for one last mile. And we're fast asleep by the fireside. Dreaming these dreams for free. That's just my dog and me. I never felt so free. It's just my dog and me.